Welcome to the Beeson Podcast, coming to you from Beeson Divinity School on the campus of Samford University. Welcome to the Beeson Podcast. I'm Mark Gennolette, and I oversee Beeson's newly minted PhD in Theology for the Church. And I'm joined today by two friends of mine, Buck Poole and Ryan Martin. These two here are a member of our initial cohort in our new program here, and we're so glad that the two of you have decided to join us today. So I'm going to just toss you some questions. We're going to try to get a sense of what our program is about, and you all will give us an insider ball's perspective on what we're doing. Sure. So before we start, though, just give me a sense of who you all are in terms of vocation and maybe something about your family life as well.
You want me to start?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. Yeah, I'm Ryan Martin, and I lead an online school for Greek and Hebrew called Kairos Classroom. We teach Greek and Hebrew classes largely to lay people that are not kind of in a seminary type environment, but also serving seminaries and universities as well, like Beeson. We've been able to teach some classes to help Beeson students as well. So I wake up in the morning and teach Greek, and I love it. Married to Aubrey for, 14 years.
Yes.
And we have two little boys. Micah's 5 and Hezekiah's 3.
You know, we get to see Ryan and his family go to our church as well, so we get to see the crew regularly.
Yes.
They're wonderful. All right, Brother Buck, what do you got to tell us?
Yes, absolutely. So I serve at Cross Point Church, which is a Baptist church out in Trussville, and there I'm the missions minister and senior adult minister. It's a dual role, quite an interesting combination there. I've been there for about 7 years now. Started when I started my MDiv here at Beeson. Started part-time there and then have stayed there since. And so I do not teach Greek when I wake up in the morning, and that's probably a good thing for the senior adults at Cross Point, certainly. I'm married to April. We have two kids, an 11-year-old daughter, Kate, and 8-year-old son, Braden, and they keep us busy most of the time, so...
Yeah. Love it. And I've got to see Buck in his context, too, at their church, which has been a real blessing. Okay, so first question I want to toss you away. We wrestled here internally as a faculty with this new PhD program for a while, and I'll just be honest, I had some misgivings myself about this program because, you want to be careful not to allow some of these new programs to begin to shift the sort of mission and purpose of the institution. And we exist at Beeson, as you both know, you're both products of our MDiv as well, to train folks for vocational ministry. And this PhD that we've done here is in some sense a kind of natural extension of what we do best. So I just want to hear you all talk about what piqued your interest in this program, what drew you toward it. I'm going to dive a little bit deeper into this sort of the nuts and bolts in a little bit, but just maybe a broader sense of like what drew you into this thing.
Yeah, I mean, it did feel like a very Beeson thing, the way that it was described to me. Very, very broad and in good ways, pulling from a lot of different, sub-disciplines or kind of worlds within the theology, biblical studies landscape. I really liked that our seminars, regardless of kind of what our main project is or what our research is in, everybody takes an Old Testament seminar, a New Testament seminar, these history and doctrine seminars. So I knew whatever I was working on that I would have voices from kind of all over that landscape, kind of pressuring my project in really positive ways. But also, I mean, to the kind of ecclesial bent of what you're speaking, I mean, I think y'all want us to do research that's useful for the church, useful for God's people, and that would be kind of an influence on our decision making and really what things to chase and to think through what we want to do. And I think that was those two things together, both the breadth and kind of the grounded in the church nature of things, were really appealing to me.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah, for me, I knew I wanted to do postgraduate work and wasn't quite certain what that looked like. And frankly, just looking at some other programs and things, just nothing seemed to fit what I was looking for. Perhaps at times some of them seemed too specific, kind of too hyper-focused in one particular area that I didn't necessarily want to be in. And then the flip side is when you certainly started looking into PhD programs, I didn't, you know, my vocational calling, I believe, is in the church. I don't believe it's necessarily in the academy. And so much of that kind of took off those programs, kind of off the option list. Yeah. And so I really didn't know exactly what I was looking for, frankly, whether it even existed. And then, like manna from heaven, you know, Beeson just drops this program. No, in all honesty, as the program was rolled out, and I began to read the description of what we were hoping to accomplish here, it was new, and it was meeting all of those things that I was looking for. In some ways, I've told my wife, in some ways, it was almost like it was built for us, or for what we were looking for. From an institution that I know and love, so yeah. it's been a beautiful thing.
That's great, and we probably got the cart a little bit before the horse. So we're playing inside this pool now. But for those that don't know anything about this program, what we're trying to do, it is a bit different. I mean, in the sense of the way in which we've organized our curriculum, and then the ways in which we've also organized our research seminars, which we now have officially called the Commons. So, if I were to ask you, like, just give us your elevator, 30-second, minute, 2-minute, whatever it is, but like, try to explain to people, like, what is our curriculum here? What are we trying to do? And then I have some more questions about that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we're doing here what Beeson does well. We're not. Beeson was explained to me one time as not trying to force you to know how to land the plane, but to teach you somewhat how it's always been flown in the history of the church. And
I've been here 20 years. I've never heard that.
Really?
That's fantastic. I need to write it down.
Write that down. That's it.
So not how to
land it, but how it's been flown. Right. Okay. And I think that's
and hopefully not to crash it.
And hopefully not to crash it. That is certainly a goal. So I think that's what we're trying to accomplish here, yeah. on a different level of depth, of understanding how the Bible has been read, how it's been applied, how it's been used over the history of the church in ways that some have been good, some have not been so good, right. but giving us these tools to work with that can be useful.
You want to piggyback on that, Ryan?
Man, I don't really have much to add. I mean, I think sometimes I feel like I'm having my cake and eating it too in terms of just academic excellence, but also grounded in the life and ministry of the church and in kind of the practical concerns of people following Jesus. It really, I feel like I'm benefiting from both of those approaches and all the best ways.
Yeah. And again, what makes what we're doing here, at least on the curricular level, a little distinct is normally if you do it sort of traditional PhD, you hop into your academic discipline right from the get-go, at least at some level, and you tend to be focused within a narrow stream of research. Mm-hmm. And here, you know, we require all of y'all coming in as a cohort, and we really do think of you as a kind of cohort model. So you're coming into this together. There's seven in your incoming cohort, and you'll take a shared set of courses together. And these aren't meant to be coverage classes. They're meant to be kind of high-level PhD research seminar-style courses. You've done one on Old Testament already. You've done one on New Testament. You're about to do your first history and doctrine. So, again, this is what we're trying to shape here is Old Testament, New Testament, two courses in history and doctrine, one in church and world in the 21st century, and then a directed readings course that prepares you to defend your dissertation proposal. But, you know, you're working in New Testament, right? And Buck, you're working in church history, mainly 19th century North American Christianity. And yet, you both had to sit in an Old Testament class,
right?
And you both had to sit just doing, and you're about to both read Jonathan Edwards together, right? Going into this class with Dr. Sweeney. Right. So talk to me a little bit about that. I mean, just the nature of being forced maybe a little bit outside of your comfort zone, trying to think outside the box, and the way in which the interdisciplinary dynamics might serve this generalist approach that we're trying to achieve.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think for me, like having a general idea of the kind of project I want to do for my dissertation and going into these seminars with reading, again, I wouldn't sit down and choose these books for my own personal research project, right?
Really?
At least not all of them.
You're not going to read Hans Reiter on your own?
I mean...
Maybe that one.
That one, for sure. You picked a bad example there. Yeah. I think it's been very, I think, productive and fruitful for me to like try to connect. Here are the strengths and weaknesses of what I think I'm trying to do. Here are the holes. Here are the places where I know that I want to explore further. Okay, now how can I put all of that in conversation with Jonathan Edwards, with, you know, the Old Testament hermeneutical traditions, like all these, I mean, even the papers that I've written so far have really come straight out of that connection, the connection between what I'm interested in and what I want to do and what we're reading together as a cohort, and the conversations that we have in those kind of intensive seminars. They've just, already taken my research and my thinking in totally different ways than I would have ever expected.
Yeah, that's great.
Certainly. I think Ryan's hitting on it. There's a level of freedom that's been given in the curriculum where, yes, we're all reading the same things. We're all drawing from the same sources through the seminar. But at least with our research after the seminar, there's some freedom there to be able to take the themes that we've wrestled with together and then maybe try to apply them or insert them into our own discussion, our own interest narrative research. And that's been a really good, good thing.
Yeah, if you can kill two birds with one stone, it's kind of an ideal world. Now, that's not always easy to achieve, but if you can do that, that's a blessing. I want to talk a little bit more about the program and then maybe think a little bit about how you might talk to people who are considering a program like this. Yeah. But let me ask you this question, or frame it this way for you. Some people might look at a PhD in theology for the church. It's clunky. And maybe we'll do better at some point, but that's what we got. As a kind of maybe hyperinflated doctor of ministry, not to any way denigrate that degree. And yet at the same time, it's not necessarily a kind of specialized traditional PhD either, but it's still very much an academic degree. Mm-hmm. So talk to us a little bit about sort of the academic workload, the intellectual kind of heavy lifting that you've had to do in this program already. How are you navigating that? Because both of you still are, vocationally active in your call. So talk a little bit about the intellectual freight of what's going on in your world now.
Yeah, I'm sure. Just candidly, it's the most difficult intellectual exercise I've ever been part of, as it should be, right? I mean, I think that's the hope that it would be, and it is. I didn't know exactly what to expect. I don't have a family full of PhDs, or we don't know what to expect here, right? You don't know. Are you walking into kind of a ramped up, MDiv or DMin, or, is it the logical progression? Right. And I would argue from what I've seen so far, the answer to that is no. That it is a completely different ballgame from an academic rigor, from a just depth that you have to bring to the subject. Yeah. And that's been hugely beneficial for me already because it forces you to expand. It forces you to grow, and it's forced me to deepen in some areas that I frankly needed to. Yeah. So that's been a good thing.
That's helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, I've never gotten a DMin, but this is not what I would imagine that was like. I mean, I think the level, just the kinds of sources that we're engaging and the kinds of ways that we're being asked to write and think. Or what I would imagine would be typical for PhD programs across the field. But there is a degree of flexibility, I feel like, I work full time and it's a lot, but I'm doing it. I'm pulling it off. It ebbs and flows, the workload, as seminars are coming up. I don't know if you've already said this or not, but it's not a residential program.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's three seminars throughout the year. There's just all week, all day for a week.
Yeah. So say a little bit more because that might be helpful for people who are kind of learning about
right. This. So during these first 2 years, kind of before we're full time on the dissertation, we meet three times a year for 1 week, all day. There's readings that we do that lead up to that. So we get a syllabus and we're reading through books and articles and pieces leading up to the seminar that then we discuss in the seminar. And then after the seminar, we go and write a paper and do a project. So that right there times five, I guess, leading up to the directed readings thing. and then 2 years on the dissertation.
And we have all this information for folks. This is available on our website, just in terms of the details. But yeah,
but it's been, I mean, it's been doable. I mean, I feel like the type of mentoring, coaching, direction I've been getting is just the highest level of, like, we're learning how to engage in the guild, and we're learning how to write well, to research and read well, and to engage the right sources and think through these things. But at the same time, the nature of the freedom that we have, which I think you used that word earlier, Buck. Yeah, the freedom that we have to kind of work with our own work schedules and life. You know, we can work on these things when we want to. And again, I know I've said this earlier, but it just feels like we're getting the best of two different worlds. But yeah. I don't feel like I'm getting anything less in terms of the academic expectations and intensity in that regard.
Okay, that's a curveball question for both of you, but especially for Buck, because I know you're a local pastor as we speak. So heavy lifting kind of intellectual activities here, a lot of reading that might seem somewhat esoteric, lost in the theological abstract landscape of Whateverville. So you're engaging in all of that, and you're pastoring. Yeah. So how do you see those two related to one another, and how is this sort of serving your local ministry, maybe even now?
Yeah, certainly. You have to be mindful of that. If I take the conversations that we have in our seminar and I go, you know, regurgitate those at the church, I'm going to get some funny looks sometimes, just because it's a different way of talking.
Yeah.
It is engaging sources that most of, you know, our people would not be familiar with, that I wasn't familiar with until I, you know, engaged with them in the program. And so you have to be mindful of that. I think one thing that has been helpful in that regard has been trying to make sure that I maintain a consistent devotional life.
Yeah.
Not allowing the academic reading to become my only interaction with the Lord. That I still have a devotional life that allows me to maybe stay a little more engaged in the real world that we live in. And I think that's been helpful. It's not always perfect, and I can tell when it's not, but that's been a helpful thing for me.
Yeah, that's good. I think Eugene Peterson said years ago that no one leaves seminary unscathed.
Yeah.
So I think that's always part of the challenge that we feel, especially, I mean, even someone like myself that does this for a living. Right?
Sure.
It's a challenge. That's good. Okay, so let's say that there's a proverbial listener out there who's either a pastor or maybe even someone coming out of an MDiv but sees their theological vocation primarily in ecclesial terms. What would you tell that person if they're like, not everyone needs to do this? We say that all the time. Like, you could be a wonderful pastor and never do this. So this is not necessary. But for those that are wired in a certain way, like, how would you help them sort of discern and think through what this kind of program might offer them?
I mean, the person that you just described, yes. Like, this is...
Do
it. Yeah, do it. again, that's not everybody. Yeah. I mean, not everybody that conceives of their vocation in that way also has these deep kind of academic-type questions or desires to explore these things at this level.
Yeah.
But if you do, I just think this is a very special and unique program that not only allows you to do that from your vocational ministry position, but values your vocational ministry position. Not as this other thing that's in the way of your studies, but that this is the location from which you should engage in your studies. This should drive and direct and kind of pressure your research in ways that are good for you and for your people and for the church.
Yeah, I think one thing that I never wanted to do when I considered any of this type of work was I never wanted to be working just for letters at the end of my name. I mean, I think that's, I didn't want to be in a position where, hey, we just need these letters. Because to your point, you don't need that. You can be exactly the pastor that God's called you to be without this level of degree.
So, or as my kids tell me, you're the doctor on the plane that can't really help anybody.
It can't help anybody, right.
Let's keep it in perspective.
That's exactly right. And so with that being said, and with the time commitment involved and the sacrifices that you inevitably have to make when you pursue this level of academic work, you want to make sure that it's useful, that it's something that's actually going to be helpful, that it's not something you're putting on a resume. It's something that is actually building you and growing you to be able to help people. And I think that's where this program in particular, again, with that flexibility and that freedom, allows you to really begin to hone in on what is it? What is it that the Lord's called you to that you can expand upon and grow during this window of time that will not just be for your own professional growth, but will be a tool in helping you develop other brothers and sisters in Christ?
Good. I'm drawing from memory here, so people may have to correct me on this, but if my memory serves me, I think J.I. Packer, for many years, for the end of his life, emphasized the necessity and the importance of catechesis in the life of the church. You know, there's like just felt a deep heaviness that we're losing that kind of brokering work in many ways that a pastor would do in terms of helping people think and reason theologically and engage biblically and shape the way in which they view the world through that Trinitarian lens. So I think that's so much about what this our hopes are, is that you have this kind of brokering, catechetical impulse that's not locked in kind of esoteric discussions, but actually kind of worked out in with the, how would I say, the boots on the ground, I guess one would say. Okay, final question. For those who are listening to this and may be inclined to pray for our new program and may be inclined to pray for the students that are in it. So you're our first cohort. There's seven of you. We just went through admissions round two, and we hope the new cohort will be in January, Lord willing. How would you encourage people maybe to pray for this program, pray for the students who are involved in it? Be curious to hear your thoughts on that.
You know, I think if you want to pray for us, it's that we will continue to have the ability to put in the work that's necessary, to do that with joy, to not do that out of obligation, but to be able to do it out of a sense of purpose and joy and again that freedom that comes along with that. So I think that's one way you could pray for us. The program in general, I mean, you know, it's an infant now, so just pray that it'll continue to develop in the way that the Lord has created it to, right? I think that would be my prayer.
That's great. Thanks.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to that. I think in any sort of academic context where you're, you know, submitting papers and trying to earn a, you know, be you know, get good grades, and there can be this desire to impress the people around you, to kind of stake out a place for yourself, and in kind of the academy, and I think just even the raison d'être for this program resists that in some ways that I'm already thankful for. But it's still hard, you know. You still kind of can be tempted to write about what's the newest exciting thing that'll get me, you know, the right kind of attention that I want, or how can I make my own mark on the academy in this way or that. And well, you know, that's not all bad by any stretch. But I think this program is uniquely set up to kind of guide us into the guild in such a way that leaves our souls intact, helps us to see the eternal value of what we're doing, and to realize this is not for us, that this is for the Lord and for His church. But yeah, that's still hard. So I think pray for our hearts and for our motivations, and that these academic and research endeavors will draw us closer to the Lord and closer to our church communities rather than the wedge that I think gets driven sometimes.
That's a good word. Paul House, who's my erstwhile colleague and your erstwhile professor, recently retired. I'll never forget one day he passed me in the hallway. I think I got some sort of promotion or something around here. He said, yes, I remember the day when it dawned on me that I was no longer a young, promising scholar. Time has a way of humbling us, I think, on these kind of things to keep it in perspective. Anyway, fellas, what a delight. Thank you for taking of your time to share your perspective and what the Lord's doing and your lives and your families, your vocation here in this context with us. Listeners, this has been Buck Poole and Ryan Martin. Thank you for joining us, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Please pray for the Lord's work here at Beeson, and we're praying for you, and for now we say goodbye. You've been listening to the Beeson Podcast, coming to you from the campus of Samford University. Our theme music is by Advent Birmingham. Our announcer is Mark Genolette. Our engineer is Rob Willis. Our producer is Neil Embry. And our show host is Doug Sweeney. For more episodes and to subscribe, visit beesondivinity.com/podcast. You can also find the Beeson Podcast on iTunes, YouTube, and Spotify.